Welcome to radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to firehouse.com.
Welcome to the Leaders Toolbox here on radio at firehouse.com. My name is Peter Matthews, and I'm here today with the host, Fire Chief Richard Gassaway. Good afternoon, Rich. How's everything out in Minnesota?
Hi, Pete. Wonderful. Getting some beautiful fall weather and no complaints. It's just been gorgeous here. The new I-35W bridge is open, so it took just over a year to rebuild. That's been wonderful to have that back open and traffic moving normally here in the metro.
That's good to hear. I'm glad things are going back to normal. For the travel, at least, unfortunately, some of the families, I'm sure, are still dealing with issues, but things kind of slowly transition, so that's good to hear. I know we have a bunch of trade shows coming up, including Firehouse Central. What do you have on the plate for the next couple of months? Where can we find you?
Well, I will be at Firehouse Central in Las Vegas. I'm doing a pre-conference presentation called The Leader's Toolbox based on the podcast. It's a four-hour program on October 14th. And then I will also be at the Volunteer and Combination Officer Symposium in Clearwater, Florida, doing the keynote on November 1st on 50 Ways to Kill Your Brother, Fire Ground Command Decision Making. So those are two opportunities. If anybody would be at either of those shows, be sure to stop in and say hello and chat a little bit with me.
Okay, and if you do have any questions for Chief Gassaway, please feel free to send us an email or any comments and feedback to podcast@firehouse.com. Chief, a couple questions. Let's start off here. It says, I'm an officer for a volunteer fire department, and we, all the officers, are struggling with a couple of members who don't seem to be on the same page as the rest of the department. They act like the rules were written for other people and not them. They do things that are unsafe and clearly don't care who they make mad in the process. I'm hearing lots of complaints from the members about this behavior, but I don't know how to fix it. Can you offer some advice?
Well, I don't think the problem that this writer describes is particularly unique to his or her organization. I think what they're describing is a situation where the tail is wagging the dog, if I can use a cliche, that is where the person who should be following the rules seems to be the person who is establishing their own set of rules around what might already exist in the department. There could be a number of reasons why this is occurring. They could be trying to overthrow the current department's leadership and establish new ways of doing things. Again, like with all podcast questions, there's always an element of unknown that comes along with the question that requires me to make some assumptions. But the one thing that's clear is there's a couple members here that are out of focus with what the department's expectations are of their behavior. And I would encourage this department first to take a look at their mission statement, if they have one. And if they don't have one, to engage their department membership in the process of developing a mission statement. It's certainly easy for the chief or even just the officers of the department to develop a mission statement, but I think it's something that's important that everyone is involved and everyone's input is gathered, because that creates some ownership in what that mission statement says. And the mission statement says, why do we exist as an organization? And I think that what this person is describing is a situation where these two people may have fallen out of touch with why the department exists and what role they're supposed to play within the parameters of why the department exists. In other words, they're out doing what they want to do, when, where, why, how they want to do it, regardless of what the department has established as the purpose for existence. If you involve all the members in developing the mission statement, or if they have one, maybe even just bringing it up for a discussion of updating it and getting all the members to, as using the updating as a process to get all the members back to focus on the purpose for existing as an organization, and including these two people, assuming that they would come and take part of that process. Getting everyone's fingerprints on it then helps to build the ownership. And having the mission statement, either new or revised, gives the department and its members purpose. After that, I think that the next step is to engage the members in developing a vision statement. And the vision statement is what I would consider the sequel to the mission statement. The vision statement, or the mission statement, is why do we exist? The vision statement is where are we going as an organization? What is our direction? What are we trying to accomplish? And you can see how these two things can tie back to the problems that they're having with these two members, because I don't think they're buying into the purpose of the organization, and I don't think they're buying into the direction of the organization. They have a direction they want to go, but I don't think it's consistent with the direction that the organization wants to go. So having this common mission and now a common vision, a common direction, gets everybody moving in the same direction and looking forward to taking the trip as to wherever it is that the department is going. The third leg of this three-legged stool is core values. So once you have the mission and once you have the vision, then the next thing to engage the members in is a discussion about what are the core values of the people who serve in our organization. And I can give you some examples, but I really can't tell you what your core value should be. This is something that you should engage your members in a discussion about: what should the core values of the people who serve in our department be. And again, this ties back to the two people that they're having problems with, because some of their behavior, I would guess, is inconsistent with what the department's core values would be. If they weren't inconsistent, then this person wouldn't be writing in with the question, and he or she wouldn't be having the problems that they're having. So what they have is an example of a couple of people whose behaviors are not within the expectations, at least of this person. And that's a clarification I should make, is that I'm only hearing the judgment of the writer here. Although they do say it's making other people in the organization upset as well. If their behavior is not consistent with what the entire organization would expect, then there's a problem. But before you can address the problem with them, they need to understand where are the boundaries? What are the boundaries of expectations of behavior of somebody on the department? And that, you know, and those boundaries can be defined by policies and procedures, for sure, but those boundaries can also be better defined by core values or core expectations, you know, whether it's honesty, loyalty, dedication, not being argumentative. One of the phrases I've probably used in previous podcasts is, it's okay to disagree, but it's not okay to be disagreeable. So you can have your disagreements with people, but you need to do it in a way that's courteous and professional. Now, I would guess from the fact that this behavior is making other people mad in the process, that their behavior is not running consistent with what the expectations are of the members. Engaging the members in a discussion of what the core values are, again, assuming that these two people would be sitting in, would establish for everyone, including these two, what the whole organization expects in the way of behavior of their members, you know, that they follow the rules. You know, one of the things that I think you said the writer said is they don't like to follow the rules as if the rules are written for other people and not for them. Well, you know, a core expectation, a core value would be that our members follow the rules whether they like the rules or whether they don't. And there's a process by which you can advocate for a rule to be changed or updated or modified, but simply not following it to make a statement that you don't like the rule is outside the boundaries of expectations. And that would be, you know, an example of a good core value for this organization that might lay out for these people what is expected. This might be one of the most helpful ways to deal with these challenging persons is to lay down the expectations. But you need to do this for everyone. You can't do it just for them. You can't just single them out because you might fix them and then somebody else becomes the problem. These really need to be the expectations and the core values for the entire organization, not just what is applied to these two people because they just happen to be the ones causing problems right now. And again, getting the entire organization involved in developing them and getting their commitment to live by these, and then it becomes everyone's responsibility to hold each other accountable for those behaviors that are unacceptable. So that a member can tell one of these people when they're acting this way, that's not consistent with the core values we've set for this department. I know that, and you know that. And I'm calling you out on this. I'm telling you that that's not how we should behave as a department. Now, it might not be their peer who would be the one who would have official authority over them to, you know, to make the behavior change. But I think it's peer influence, not necessarily peer pressure, but peer influence that helps people see when they've gone off the track and need to be told by somebody who is their coworker that, you know, and if I can just use an analogy, you know, to say, you're killing me here. Your behavior is killing me, and it's harming the organization. And look what it's doing. When you behave this way, look what it's doing to other people in the organization. Now, to be the person who says that to someone causing trouble has to be somebody who's pretty secure in themselves to say, you know what, I'm an owner of this department, and I have a great deal of pride in my ownership of this department, and I'm not going to let someone ruin our organization with their undesirable behavior. So I'm going to call them out on it when I see it happening. And if enough people do this, then the people whose behavior is unacceptable will either start to behave in an acceptable way, or they'll find that the organization in general won't tolerate them behaving this way. And my advice back to the writer is don't make this a one-person crusade. Don't make this your battle to try to change these two people. And it's I think the writer said he's an officer, but he didn't say whether he's the chief or not. So he or she might not have the, you know, the highest level of authority to deal with these two individuals. Anyhow, they might just be you know, one of the company officers that is being impacted by the behavior of these two and hearing from other people and might feel frustrated that they're not in a position to, you know, take more formal action. So I tell the writer, you know, if you have an established mission and a vision and core values that have been developed by the entire department and people understand that that's the expectation that everybody's going to live by, then these two individuals will have nowhere to run and hide or run and behave that way, that they won't be held accountable by the members. You know, those behavioral expectations are something that needs to be held of everybody in the organization, and everyone should own into those expectations. Now, once those things are established, so you have mission, you have vision, you have core values, what happens if they still don't behave well? Now, they still don't play well in the sandbox with the other children, and you have other issues that they're causing that they're not being true and loyal to the department's mission and vision and core values. I would say that, again, this would present an opportunity for a three-step approach to try to change their behavior. I should say get them to change their behavior. The first would be to teach. The writer or someone in the department, the chief or another officer, someone needs to make sure that the person or persons they're having the challenge with understand what each core value is and what it means. So the first thing is to teach them, you know, this core value, this is what it is, this is what it means. When you are consistent to this core value, this is what expected behavior looks like. When you're not consistent with this core value, this is what behavior looks like. And might maybe even use examples. On occasion, your behavior has not been consistent with the core value, and here's what that behavior has looked like, and use that as an example. So, you know, when you've done this, it's had this impact on the organization. And using that example, whether you use their behavior or just some generic example, perhaps allows them to see what desired and undesired behavior looks like. I think that also when you're teaching someone about expected behavior, it's a good thing to say when someone behaves in a way that's inconsistent with this particular core value, this is the impact to the organization. So when someone doesn't follow the rules and does what they want and don't care who they step on and who they hurt and what they say, this is how this impacts the organization. This is the negative consequence of that behavior. And again, this is part of the teaching. And it's really easy to say, well, wouldn't that be common sense, Rich? You know, wouldn't they know if they're not following the rules that, you know, others aren't going to like it? Not necessarily. You know, common sense is not that common for everyone. And sometimes when people are behaving in ways that are undesirable, they're the last to realize it, and they're the last to realize the impact that it is having on other people. So the part of the teaching is to help them realize the core value or the core expected behavior and what that looks like when people do it and what it looks like when they don't and what happens to the organization when they don't follow it. The second step after teaching is coaching. So after you teach them what the behavior is and what it looks like, is coaching them individually on how to behave in a way that is consistent with the department's core values. Now, you have to get to the past the teaching where you think they understand what the core value means, and then coach them about how to fulfill it. So say, for example, you've gone through the teaching part, you've told them or shared with them, you know, the mission and the vision and the core values and explained what it looks like, just like a teacher teaches students, and then their behavior doesn't align. They do something that isn't consistent with that core value. You know, go on a call and they're freelancing and doing things that I think the writer said they do things that are unsafe. So they did something that was unsafe, maybe got away with it, no one got hurt. And the coaching then has the coach sit with the player and say something like, last night when we were on this call and these things happened, you behaved this way. And when you behave this way, it caused this problem. And that behavior, when you behave that way, isn't consistent with our core values. It may not have been consistent with the mission or the vision either, but I'm using the core value as an example. And here's how I would like you to behave the next time something like this happens. So in the process of coaching, you're actually kind of reteaching it to them, just like a sports coach, you know, a little league coach would teach little league players, you know, how to be better at batting. You know, you teach them how to hold it and how to hold the bat and how to swing. Then you coach them, and that's what you're doing. Is in, you know, next time you're at bat, I want you to hold the bat and swing it this way. And you're telling this employee that, you know, next time, remember, next time this happens, this is how I want you to behave that is consistent with our core values. And give them a couple of examples of what acceptable behavior would be. You know, say they're given an order. With the core value of the department might be to just not do the order and do whatever you want to do, regardless of the legitimacy of the order, and create havoc on this incident scene. And that might be an example. So when you're coaching, you'd say, when you're given an order on an incident scene, unless that order makes you believe that you're in grave danger for your own safety, assuming that it doesn't, then you should comply with the order first, and then when we come back to the station, talk with the person who gave you the order to understand why they gave you the order and explain, not argue, but explain your perspective about how you think the order could have maybe been different and how the organization could have benefited from that. But out at the scene of the incident, if you choose not to do the order or to be argumentative or to do something counter to what you're being told, that's inconsistent with probably not only core values, but hopefully some policies that they have about having to dutifully fulfill the orders, especially on an emergency scene. I would guess that these people that are behaving this way haven't been held accountable for their behavior. In other words, no one has said, last night when you did this, that was inappropriate. Here's what happened. Here's the consequence it created. And here's the reasons you need to not do that anymore. And here's some examples about how to do it. I suspect that maybe that hasn't happened in this scenario. Most of the time, that is enough to get people to understand where the boundaries are. You know, think about it. You're framing it up and saying, here's, you know, there's lines here that you cannot cross. And I'm framing it up for you as to where those lines are that you can't cross. The challenge is when you're coaching is to be patient with the person that you're providing the coaching to. Just like a sports coach, they don't simply tell a player one time how to change a stance or how to throw the ball or swing the bat better and expect perfection from that time forward. Coaching is an ongoing thing where you have to continually remind people of expected behavior and coach them and give them examples and give them encouragement. And when they do it right, tell them, you know, you did it right, and give them support when they're doing what is expected of them. So to this person and listeners, when you get to the coaching level, after you've taught them, remember that coaching is a process. It's not a one-time explanation of what the behavior would look like, but something that's ongoing. And keep in mind that changing a person's behavior is not necessarily an easy thing to do, so some patience with that. However, there may come a time when the coach or the officer or the chief has to come to the realization that they have done a proper level of teaching and they have done an appropriate amount of coaching, and the behavior still is not changing, and it needs to be elevated to another level now. And that's where we get involved in counseling. So first is teach, then to coach, and now we're to counseling. So if the coaching is attempted and it isn't working, then we have to take the employee down or member down a different route. And this is where we begin to introduce consequences as a means by which to help them decide whether they wish to change their behavior. So when we were teaching and coaching, we weren't using consequences. We were using positive reinforcement, encouraging, giving them examples of good behavior, telling them when they did it right, yep, that's exactly what I would hope that you would do, and you did good. But when none of that seems to be working adequately, and you start to introduce the counseling concept, you also bring forth now the discussion of the consequences of their behavior. So when you're counseling, you'd say something like, this is the we met and talked about what is an expectation of the behavior. That was the teaching part. We gave you some examples and some coaching, but it doesn't seem to be working. And now I need to have a discussion with you about what potential consequences lie on the horizon if we don't see a change in this behavior. And some people, unfortunately, some people won't change their behavior until it's made uncomfortable for them to break from their old behavior and to do something new and different. For some people, teaching and coaching are enough, and that's a wonderful situation to have, as you teach and coach, and they want to change, and they want to be their best, and some maybe don't share the enthusiasm for wanting to change their behavior, and it moves into this consequence mode. So in the consequence mode, you have to introduce the consequence or the potential penalty for that undesired behavior. For example, I tell my kids, I'd like for you to clean up your room. And they may decide that it's in their best interest to clean up their room because they want to have a clean room, or they may decide that, you know, this is Dad's rule and not mine, and I'm not that interested in having my room cleaned up. So what I can do is I can use a reward, or I can use a consequence. The reward might be, if you clean up your room, I'll let you have a sleepover this weekend. So that's kind of a win-win, because I get a clean room that I'd like to have, they get to have a sleepover, which they would like to have, and they clean up their room, they get the sleepover, they got what they wanted, I got what I wanted. Now, it doesn't always work that conveniently, and in comes the consequence. So you say, let's go with, I tell them, you clean up your room and you get to have a sleepover. Well, what's the consequence if they don't clean up the room? Well, the consequence is, if you don't clean up your room, you don't have a sleepover. But when you frame it up this way, again, using an example with my kids, they're now in charge of their behavior. They own their behavior. They're consciously choosing the reward or the consequence. So they can choose to clean up the room and get the reward, or they can choose to not clean up the room and have the consequence. And when you're dealing with an employee like the one in this example, the reward in this case might be continued membership on the department, and the consequence might be they're going to be leaving the department. So when you got to the, you know, to down to the point now where we're counseling, you could say, you know, we really would like to have you continue as a member on the department. You know, you have these qualities that are really beneficial for us. And to be able to ensure that you can continue to stay on the department, here are the things that we need for you to do to change your behavior or to comply with our core values and our mission and our vision and our policies and procedures or whatever to be able to stay on the department. Okay? That's the win-win. We get what we want, which is you following the rules and behavior that's consistent with our mission and vision and core values. You get what you want, which is staying on the department. Again, assuming they want to stay on the department. The consequence for not complying with our mission, vision, and core values is you may have to leave our organization. But you're in charge of your behavior. You own your behavior, you control your behavior, and you're responsible for your behavior. So if your behavior is consistent with what we need to have, then you get what you want to have, and that is to be able to stay on the department and contribute to the department. If your behavior is inconsistent with our expectations, then your behavior will result in this consequence, and that is that you'll be leaving the department. Again, that's the final step. It's first to teach, and then to coach, and then to counsel. And the challenge with counseling is that you have to be consistent with carrying through on the behavior. Like if I tell my kids, for back to that example, if you clean up your room, you get to have a sleepover, and they don't clean up their room, and then Friday night comes and they still want to have the sleepover. Well, if you let them have the sleepover, you have not stayed consistent to the reward for the desired behavior. So they don't clean up the room, and they still get to have the sleepover. Well, the message you have sent is, if you don't do what I ask you to do, you still get to reap the rewards for your behavior that is inconsistent with what I wanted you to do. You can see how that'd be a very confusing message. And the message is also, whether you do what I want you to do or whether you don't do what I want you to do, in the end, you still get to do what you want to do. Well, if that's the message, that's a pretty easy, you can predict the behavior, what they're going to do. They're going to do what they want to do. And that's probably what this writer is saying, is they're doing whatever they want to do. Well, probably because they've been told if you don't do what you're supposed to do, there's going to be a consequence. But then that consequence never comes. They're never held accountable for that behavior. Well, why would they ever want to do it any differently if they're not being held accountable for it? So when you lay this out, when you're doing this counseling, you need to be consistent and predictable in your behavior. If they do what they want, they get the reward. If they don't do what they're supposed to do, they don't get the reward. And another way of saying that is that there's some consequence or penalty or discipline. This works in the fire department. It works in parenting. It works in other organizations. It's simply using the positive outcome to reinforce what you want to have. If you do this, you get this. If you don't do this, then you don't get that. Versus consequence management of do this or else. You know, if you don't do this, then there's going to be a penalty. Frame it up in the course of a positive. You know, we want you to stay on the department. We want you to be productive. We want you to contribute. And to be able to do that, you have to follow our rules. The final stage here, after teaching, coaching, and counseling, is formal discipline. So let's just say you tried all those things and they just didn't work. Well, that's when you have to get formal and have actual discipline, which can include a variety of things, verbal warning, written warning, suspension. If you're going down the road of suspending people and possibly terminating people, I would say it would be a good time to talk to either your city attorney or if your private department, your department's attorney, to make sure that you're doing it right. People have rights, and in many states, volunteers have rights, and you don't want to find yourself taking disciplinary action against someone in a way that's inconsistent with laws or what their rights are. So maybe it'd be a good time when you get to that final step to consult with an attorney and seek some good advice about where to go, and they're going to want to see some good documentation of all the things that you've done. So when you teach, you document. When you coach, you document. When you counsel, you document. And then when you get to the point where you have to meet with your attorney, you can bring in all the documentation and say, here's all the things that we've done, dates, times, everything that's happened, and they'll certainly appreciate that, because if they have to defend you in some action of maybe a wrongful discharge claim is made, they'll appreciate the fact that you're well documented in the steps you've taken. In closing, remember that the purpose of discipline is not to punish; it is to change behavior. And you, when you use discipline and it results in changed behavior, that is the expected and desired result from discipline. When it doesn't change behavior and the person then has to progress to the next level of discipline, that is not the intended purpose of discipline. And some people, use my own kids for an example. My daughter, if she misbehaves, all I have to do is give her a mean look, and boy, the behavior changes right away. With my sons, it's a little different story there. And maybe some of you moms and dads out there who have sons and daughters, you can kind of relate to what I'm talking about. With my sons, it's a little more challenging. You know, if I just give them a mean look, they'll just laugh at me, and that's just different people have different things that drive them. And so don't treat every person as if they're not going to respond to the teaching and coaching and counseling, because some will respond very well and others won't. And in the end, those who don't respond are going to end up leaving the organization.
All right, Rich, going back to the beginning where you talked about looking over the mission statement, I know we had done an earlier podcast, which I will link to, that kind of covers the establishment of a mission statement and the department's values. Is there a time sequence where you should kind of review the mission statement, bring it forth to the membership to make sure everyone's in agreement, or is it really just something you create and something major happens, you change it?
Well, I think you look, if you have one now, look at it and say, is it meeting our needs? If it's meeting our needs, then it might be just a matter of getting everyone a refresher on it. You know, it's a funny thing, because as I travel around and talk with people, I say, do you have a mission statement? You know, some of the departments say, yeah, we have a mission statement. You know, everybody know you have a mission statement? You know, all 30, 50, however many people in the room, their heads are all nodding, yeah, we have a mission statement. Well, what is it? You know, crickets. No one says anything. I say, well, come on, you said you have one. What is it? Well, we don't know. Don't remember, or it's too long, or haven't seen it in a long time. And I'm not faulting the departments whose people say that. That's not a problem. That's an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, that's a golden opportunity laid in the lap of the leaders of that organization, and say, you know, I just learned right from that one question. I learned a lot. It's time for us to get reconnected with our mission. Because, you know, life, as life goes on, and you know, you're busy people, you're busy in your family life, you're busy in your work life, you're busy in your fire department life, church life, sports life, scouting, you know, you're busy in all these things. It's easy to lose track. It's easy to fall out of touch. So, you know, take the pulse of your organization and say, are they in touch with what the mission is? Is the mission reflecting what our organization really is today? You know, if you developed your mission statement 20 years ago, chances are the mission of your department has changed in the last 20 years. For some departments, the mission changes regularly if the department is, you know, progressive and they're looking for new and innovative ways to serve their community. Their mission may change every 3 to 5 years because of how they're evolving as a department. You know, if the mission statement is current and accurate and short enough for people to remember, you know, it's all, you know, all that stuff's covered in another previous podcast. Then it just might be a matter of just having a refresher of what the mission is and make sure that everybody's plugged into it. I'm not saying that you have to change it, but if you look at it and you say, oh, you know, it's a little stale. It's a little dated, you know. It's kind of like when you walk into a house, you know, and you can tell on the wallpaper and the carpeting is from the 1970s. Well, you somebody ought to be able to look at your mission statement and say the same thing. It's, you know, it's a little dated here, you know. The foil wallpaper and the shag green carpet, you know, might look good then, but, you know, it's just not the fresh look of today that we'd like it to be.
Rich, you could probably flip the words mentor and coach back and forth, and if a department's fortunate enough to have a mentor for its new members coming in. Any advice for a mentor to kind of steer a young firefighter in the direction of appropriate behavior? I know you kind of covered some of that, but is there any more advice to offer in that right?
I think there is, Pete. A couple things. One, I don't think the mentor should assume that if they take their mentee and provide them with the written mission, vision, and core values and just give them a piece of paper and say, here it is, that they should assume that the mentee is going to be able to read that and comprehend it in the context of what its intended meaning is. So I think that the mentor, it would be well spent time for the mentor to get that document or documents to the mentee and say, take some time and read these, and then let's meet and let's talk about each of them and what each of them means and what it means here and what kind of behavior is consistent with these expectations. And then secondly, I think the mentor should say to the mentee, along the way, you can expect that you're going to see people whose behavior is inconsistent with our mission and our vision and our core values. Because if it's a new person coming in and they have one person saying, these are our mission, vision, and core values, and then they see some people that their behavior is inconsistent with them, they're going to get confused about what should they do. Should I behave in a way that's consistent with the mission, vision, and core values? Or should I behave in a way that's consistent with what the way these other people are behaving that I'm observing? So if you get ahead of that, you know, and you tell the mentee, you know, we're not a perfect organization. You know, we're not everyone is completely on board with all of this right now. And you need to know that because you're going to see people behave in a way that is inconsistent with the mission and the vision and the core values. And I'm going to ask you that when you see that, to not see that behavior that's inconsistent as the expectation, the new expectation, but to, for you to stay consistent and predictable to our mission and vision and core values, regardless of how some of these other people behave, and realize that, you know, we're trying to make the organization better and more professional and consistent in our behavior, but we're not perfect, and you're going to see some of these inconsistencies. And when you do, ask for clarification. You know, ask me as your mentor, you know, you said this and I'm seeing that. Which is it? You know, how should I behave under these circumstances? And so that the mentor becomes someone who can, you know, coach them along the way, because an organization is never perfected in its behaviors of its members. You know, you got 30, 60, 100, 200, 500, 1,000, 5,000 members. Not everyone is going to be true and loyal to the organization and its mission, vision, and core values all of the time. That's probably unrealistic. So the mentor can help the mentee work through some of these incongruencies when they see behavior that isn't true to the you know, what is desired in the organization.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back to another question. And again, if you do have any questions, comments for the show, please drop us an email to podcast@firehouse.com.
Radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox here on radio@firehouse.com. Your host is Fire Chief Rich Gassaway. Chief, richgassaway.com, a website. I guess that's your site because it has some of your material on there. Can you tell us what we can find on there?
Yep. I was getting a lot of inquiries, Pete, you know, from the podcast and some articles and a couple of programs. People are following up and saying, you know, how can I contact you if I have additional questions or they, you know, might want to talk with me about some challenges or opportunities that they're having, and don't want to necessarily do it in a podcast format. So I did establish a website, richgasaway.com, and it has some information in there about you know, programs that I teach and some a couple of books that I've written that are available, one on leadership, one on decision making, some outlines to program presentations that I do that are available as well. So any of the listeners who might want to reach out to me personally, that would be the way to do it. Just go to the contact me link and get a hold of me that way.
All right, well, we'll put a link to that as well at the bottom of the podcast player page. The second question for today, Rich, it says, thank you for the podcast. It seems that just about every topic is something that's going on in my department. I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but I have certainly benefited from the advice. Now I have my own situation that I just don't know how to handle. I stopped at the fire station last weekend, and a couple of firefighters were looking at pictures on a camera phone and asked me to take a look. I didn't even know what I was going to see. Imagine my shock when I saw an image of one of our male firefighters engaged in a sexually suggestive pose with one of our female firefighters. The firefighter who took the picture on the phone said it happened at a party the night before. I'm so flabbergasted by this, I'm not even sure what questions to ask you. Can you just walk me through this? And by the way, I am the assistant chief, and the male firefighter is the chief's son.
Well, this one has lots of potential challenges for the department. There are some, again, like with all podcast questions, there's things that are not revealed by the writer that requires me to fill in some of the blanks here. First off, I'm going to assume that this party was not an official fire department function, was not on fire department property, wasn't sanctioned by the fire department, but might have been more of a private party. Maybe at someone's house or some venue completely unrelated to the fire department, because that puts it in a frames it up in one context that we'll deal with otherwise if it happened as part of a formal fire department activity. The writer said that, you know, they were shocked and flabbergasted by this sexually suggestive pose, so I'm going to assume that it was something that would be deemed inappropriate if viewed by the public. You know, one of the things that I often coach people on is they'll say, well, I don't know if this is a big deal or not a big deal, and I don't want to make a big deal where there isn't a big deal. In this case, I'd say, how comfortable would you be if that picture was on the front page of the newspaper? And if your answer is it would be devastating for our department, then I would say you've crossed into the potential big deal category here, because this picture very well could surface again in ways that will be uncomplimentary to your department, its administration, perhaps the fire chief, since the male firefighter is the chief's son. There might be some guilt by association between the chief and his son, or even some accusations that the chief condones and encourages this type of behavior because it's his son involved, or her, you know, chief's son is involved. So this is pretty big on the potential scale. Now, one of the things that I want to put out for the listeners is to be careful about you being the moral barometer for your department. The public is the ones who judge us off of what their expectations of our behavior are. So one person might look at this picture and say, I don't see a big deal with it. Another person might look at this picture and say, oh my God, you know, whoever did this, you know, needs to leave the department. I would encourage you to try to get an independent evaluation, again, maybe from a department attorney or in this case, you can't really take it to the fire chief because his son's involved. So you need to find someone who can help you to sense whether this is how potentially significant this is. And the players, again, I'm going to assume that both of the players are adults and we're not dealing with a minor, because we, you know, kind of go into a whole other realm of potential consequences if either of these parties are a minor, or even if the person who took the picture on their camera phone is a minor, or even if other minors were present when this picture was taken. So, you know, setting aside all the potential consequences of a sexually suggestive pose involving minors as participants or even observers, because that again goes in the realm of something which with much greater potential seriousness. I think that the assistant chief here is compelled at minimum to launch an inquiry. I don't want to say an investigation, but at minimum to launch an inquiry as to what happened, how, why, when, where, who was there, and this would include talking to both the parties of the photograph. And the challenge is trying to determine whether, and again, this could be going into some legal area, and I'm not an attorney, but were these two individuals both consenting adults to this activity? And the assistant chief at best should be able to flesh that out and document that this came to his attention. He talked to the parties involved. They were both consenting adults to this pose. They both were aware that their picture was being taken by another fire department member. You know, just bring full disclosure to it into a document that then the parties sign that say, you know, I acknowledge that I knew that the picture was being taken. I was consensual to this photograph. You know, to kind of set those issues aside. Now, the greater issue is, you know, what happens to the reputation of the department if something like this becomes public, especially if, by chance, any of them were wearing a fire department T-shirt or a fire department hat or anything that would give them some formal affiliation with the fire department. You know, then you know, you've got an image there that could really harm your organization. Hopefully, this organization might have some already existing policies and procedures about conduct. You know, back to the first podcast question of core values, core behavior, core expectations. Perhaps they have some policies of behavioral expectations that cover behavior on and off the job. Because we're in a position of requiring a great deal of public faith and confidence in what we do, and because our behavior has to be above reproach at all times, on and off the job, it would probably be good if this department had in place already some rules to say these are the conduct of behavior that is expected of our members, whether you're on the job or off the job, because what you do can bring harm and discredit to our department. If they have those rules, then I would say to take a look at them and determine if anything related to this behavior is a violation of the policy. If it is, then I think that they take action that would be appropriate and consistent with their policy and their rules and you know, what it says for how severe a behavior is and whether it's a first offense and so on. So I can't really tell them what to do as far as, you know, any kind of disciplinary action or holding them accountable, whether it's just a matter of, you know, coaching them or counseling them or whether it would be something that would require discipline. It would depend on what rules that they have in place. If they have no rules about off-duty behavior, then I think they have to be very careful about trying to invoke a moral judgment on their members who perhaps did something off the job, away from the fire department, not in uniform, consenting adults, and someone happened to capture it on a camera phone. Did they violate a department rule, or did they just simply do something that you would not find acceptable behavior? And I'd caution this person to not be formal in their disciplinary action based on their personal expectations of what is acceptable behavior away from work if there are no policies in place. I think they could find themselves taking a disciplinary approach and not having a defense to support it. I think that one of the things that they certainly could do is tell the person who had that picture on their camera phone that showing or displaying or sharing that while on fire department property is not appropriate. And hopefully you have some rule that would back up that, you know, showing something that is explicit is not appropriate to do it on the fire department property. So if that person were to go out that night and show that on their camera phone to somebody at their private residence or in a bar or something, I don't know that you'd have much in the way of controlling that behavior of what they did off the job. This is a pretty touchy situation because it occurred away from the fire department at a party. Now, if this happened on fire department property or a fire department official function, or if they were in uniform or a fire department issued T-shirt or something that identified them with the fire department, then I think it goes into a potential greater consequence because it could be argued that they were representing the fire department and serving in their capacity as a firefighter because they were in the uniform or they were on the fire department premise or at a fire department officially sponsored function while their behavior was inappropriate. And I think that then maybe applies a whole new set of rules and that have to do with on-the-job behavior, you know, that would apply here. Because this particular situation has so many barbs, including the fact that it's the chief's son, which could cause all kinds of problems for the department in the future, especially if the female employee later came back and said, I wasn't consenting to that pose. The chief's son told me that if I did that, that he could talk to his dad about getting me, you know, new turnout gear or getting me promoted to be an officer. And the chief's son was using his position as a relative of the chief to gain a favor and to exert influence over this female firefighter. So you can see just with that one example how this could spin out of control very quickly. So this is one of those scenarios, even though I've laid out some framework of advice, I think you need to get some legal advice about how to work through this one, because it just has the potential to spin out of control. Maybe not this week. It might take a year for that to happen. I can tell you that for sure, though, the thing not to do is just to ignore it or sweep it under the table or ask the guy to please delete the picture and hope that it goes away. This is one of those things where you need to just get some good, solid legal advice about how to protect the department, protect the chief, because he's vulnerable here because of this behavior of his son, and to protect the firefighters, because perhaps the female firefighter wasn't consenting. She was feeling threatened or coerced into this behavior, so making sure that her rights are protected as well. So get some legal advice on this one.
Okay, then you can also expand that to the fact that there's a good chance that one of the members may actually post it to a social networking site like MySpace, Facebook, etc. And again, if it's a fire department T-shirt or something to that effect, now it's out there for everybody to see, not just on the cell phone.
Yeah, that, you know, the social networking websites are so popular these days among young people, and I've got three teenage kids, so I know, you know, how actively they're all connected with each other and sending each other pictures by through their phones, and you know, Facebook and MySpace, and I think that to think that this picture would not resurface in one of those venues would be naive. To think that that happened. And even if you were to have that person delete that picture right there, right in front of you, you don't know that somebody else didn't capture it on a camera phone that you're not even aware of. So, you know, again, that's a good point, Pete, that, you know, there's a lot of ways that this incident could resurface in a way that could bring the department a great deal of harm. And for this assistant chief, a little word of caution to the assistant chief. Once you know about it, you're compelled to take some action, because if this turns ugly a year from now and somebody is able to prove that you knew about it and did nothing, you're carrying some personal liability there.
All right, Rich. Well, thank you very much. Again, the Leader's Toolbox, if you have any questions for host, Fire Chief Richard Gassaway, send an email to podcast@firehouse.com. You can send questions, any show feedback or comments. There's a bunch of links at the bottom of the player page this month, so make sure you take a look at that or those links, and that's including Rich's website. And we'll see you in a few weeks in Las Vegas and then down in Tampa.
Okay, very good. Thanks to all the listeners. I appreciate all the feedback you gave me, especially at Firehouse Expo. I enjoyed talking with some of you that come up after my presentation there and was telling me that you listened to the Leader's Toolbox. I really appreciate that feedback.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.